morning, everyone.
Morning.
Yeah, last week we talked about Elu v'Elu, and we concluded with a mahalich about Elu v'Elu and our inability to understand how certain seemingly irreconcilable ideas might alibad ames be reconcilable. And I'd like to continue that topic with, or at least consider a couple of interesting applications of that point. And the first relates to the nature of divine omnipotence. This isn't precisely the question we're going to address today, though today's discussion will help us formulate an answer. Many people have wondered or been asked, can God create a rock he can't lift? And this raises the question in general of what we mean when we say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Kol Yachol. So, initially, I would assume that that means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu could do anything. There's nothing that he can't do. Kol Yachol, omnipotent. However, the matter is not so simple. For example, HaKadosh Baruch Hu cannot destroy himself because he necessarily exists. He cannot multiply himself because he's one. These incapacities don't imply weakness. Adaraba, they speak of his greatness. When we say then HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Kol Yachol, or when we say HaKadosh Baruch Hu is omnipotent, what presumably we mean then is that he can do anything that's theoretically possible. Since it is necessarily true that God is one and that he exists, so he can't destroy himself, he can't multiply himself. Perhaps it even means God could only do that which is logically possible. And this point is made by the Rambam explicitly. Turn to page 38. The Rambam writes in 3:15 in the Mor Nevuchim, "We do not ascribe to God the power of doing what is impossible. No thinking man denies the truth of this maxim. None ignore it, but such as have no idea of logic." In other words, while we say HaKadosh Baruch Hu could do everything, we don't say that he could do that which is impossible. All philosophers consider that it is impossible for one substratum to have at the same moment two opposite properties. Likewise, it is impossible that God should produce a being like himself, or annihilate, corporify, or change himself. The power of God is not assumed to extend to any of these impossibilities. Now, it's not just the rationalist thinkers who maintain this view, but others as well. We'll consider a statement now of the Rashba and the Chazon Ish, both along similar lines. But yeah.
Obviously, the Rambam is very questionable on what you consider the nace, but from this perspective, could a nace only be something that you could explain somehow, even if it's almost...
Excellent question. So the Rashba we're about to read addresses your very question. What does a nace mean within this context? So let's take a look. Page 39. Vetzli shnei chalakim benimna. There are two types of impossibilities. Ha'echad hechrechi. V'yashar metzad atzmo. Lios tzela hamiruba gadol mi'alachsono. So one is something that's inherently impossible. So an example he gives is that the side of a square can't exceed its diagonal. In other words, a mathematical impossibility, geometrical impossibility. Understandably, the Rashba is not taking into account non-Euclidean geometry. I don't think we would like this example anymore. But his basic point is clear. V'zeh nimna gamur mitzad atzmo. Lo yeshuar bo ha'efsharus. This is inherently impossible, and it's not even conceivably possible. The hasheni, the second type of impossibility, meaning to say the second type of thing that we sometimes refer to as being impossible, lo mitzad atzmo, ela mitzidenu. It's not inherently impossible, it's just we lack the power to be able to do it. Umimnias hachachma mitzad hanimna b'teva, whether we're not smart enough or it's naturally impossible, scientifically impossible. Shelo matzinu sela motzimayim. V'hayam yikra l'sha'a, v'yashuv l'sha'a, v'shiyamdu ha'shemesh v'yareach, lo yisovevu, v'lo yazuzu mimkomam. In other words, if I say oh, can you make the rocks bring forth water? You'd say, no, that's impossible. But of course, that type of impossibility has nothing to do with the first type of impossibility. We happen not to know how to, or lack the strength of causing a rock to spring forth water, to cause the sun to stop, and the like. But those are not things that are in any way inherently impossible. An example is Tchias HaMesim. The Amnam. So what's he getting at? He's addressing your point in terms of what is a nace. Obviously, nisim are things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does. And even though we would say that's impossible, that's not something that's inherently impossible. That's just something that we lack the ability to be able to do. The Amnam, Ein kol ze nimna etzleinu, Ela mitzad miut chachmas hanivraim kulam, ulaos kocham kocham lashanos ulamiut, probably kocham lashanos hamutba bechosam hatava. Aval bechok abori yisborach, enu nimna ela mechuyav bechachmaso yisborach. She'en lisyaches lo klum chisaron velaos. Bechoa chachmaso shehu vechachmaso echad. Lo yadanu chachmaso ad sheneda mahuso. So the type of thing that we refer to as impossible that is in the second class, things that we don't have the chachma to be able to do or the strength to be able to do. So of course those things are not impossible with respect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu because he's called Yachol, as we've said. So with this, all nisim that have happened can take place. So it might be true that God cannot create, according to the Rashba, a square in which the side exceeds the length of its diagonal, but it certainly is possible for him to do all the types of nisim described in the Torah and many others. V'lo nishar b'zeh shum pikpuk b'chol ma she'amruhu haksuvim b'amesh anu tzrichim lahanach chaso harishona kefi apshat l'kiyum ha'emuna umam shenimshach achareha. Aval b'mekomo she'en anu tzrichim l'kach im tirtza likach osam l'fi ha'chachma ha'filosofis im titztarich l'kach o min ha'raton ha'pashat levad zeh shenira li b'chlal dvarim elu. So, the Rashba, again, definition of kol yachol, of omnipotence, presumably means anything that's theoretically possible. And therefore, things that are not theoretically impossible, or sorry, that are not theoretically possible, to say that God cannot do them is reasonable, is logical. The Chazon Ish seems to take for granted the same type of thing. Also take a look at the Avodas HaMelech below the Rashba. Here's the Chazon Ish. It's a very interesting point. It brings us a little bit off topic, but I'll mention it because it's so fascinating. The Chazon Ish here is discussing the question of the cosmological proof for the existence of God. We know the most basic proof is what can account for existence other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu? We know that we exist, the world exists, something must have started it, something must have caused it. Things can't just exist without there being some type of initial cause. So the Chazon Ish here, it's in the missing sections of the Chazon Ish, which are printed in the backs of the new sections, raises an interesting question. V'yesh mi ba'alei dimyon ha'sho'alim ma narviach im naskim sheyesh la'olam לעולם ממציא, אחרי שהיננו מוכרחים להסכים שבורא עולם נמצא ואין עס להשכלסו ומציאוסו נצחס, והרי הדרה קושי לדוכתה. איך אפשר לנמצא בלא הוויה? Chazon Ish says, maybe I'll ask the following. How have we really solved the problem? We're just kicking the can down the road. When we say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu must exist because something must be the cause for our existence. So then we'll ask, okay, so what's the cause for HaKadosh Baruch Hu's existence? And we'll have to say that he existed forever. So once we consider the possibility of his existing forever, why don't we just say that we existed forever? In which case the whole argument is undermined. Aval ein l'dimyon bina, ki kol nimtza sheyesh lo mida v'ketzev, orech v'shetach, anu mitzayrim b'da'atenu ha'edro. Anything that's physical, so we could imagine its non-existence. And thus, anything of this form of existence must have had some cause for its existence. So, this desk that's in front of me exists, presumably. Well, I could imagine it's not existence, so therefore it must have had some... there must be some cause for its existence, something that brought it into its existence, ultimately. And likewise, with respect to me, or the universe, or the like. However, aval yesh nimtzaim, it's interesting he calls these nimtzaim, we'll return to that point in a moment, yesh nimtzaim, she'en lahem lo midah v'lo shatach, v'hen nimtzaim b'chiyuv. There are some existence that don't have any physical aspect to them, rather, they necessarily exist. V'lo yitzuyar bahem hader, v'hein hamuskalos. With respect to them, there is no possibility for their non-existence. And these are the muskalos. Kimo, beis pa'amim beis heim dalad. For example, 2 times 2 is 4. This Chazon Ish is basically quoting the Rashba, reformulating the Rashba. And he's saying that when we speak of things that God cannot violate, like 2 plus 2 is 4. So we're referring to things that necessarily exist, and these are things that have no physical aspect to them. So about them, it doesn't make sense to ask what causes their existence, because we can't imagine their non-existence. It's only with respect to things that we could conceive of their non-existence that we perforce must conclude that there was some type of creator, some type of cause for them. So here the Chazon Ish is addressing a very important point, which is you could ask on the Rashba, what binds God? Why can't God make 2 plus 2 equal 5? And the answer is because these are things that necessarily are true. They weren't things that God created. They're just necessarily true. As I said, it's interesting, he refers to them as nimtzaim. Ukemo hamuskal she'alachson odef al ha'orech. So you see, he quotes Rashba's example. Ukiyote bahen min hamuskalos she'en lemuskal musagim memusagei guf ve'en eis lemetziusan. It's not like God created the reality of 1 plus 1 equals 2. Rather, that's something which is necessarily true. V'lo noldu me'olam, v'lo yamusu li'olam, v'ein mitziusan nirgashos, rak b'neshama, shenitan la'adam lavin ulaskil, v'nimtza kaze hu mitziuso yisborach. So, with respect to the existence of God, then, that is such an existence. His non-existence is inconceivable, like we've said. He necessarily exists. He's not a physical existence. And therefore, the original question that we asked is not true. It's not just kicking the can down the road. Rather, this is something that's necessarily true, and therefore we can see God as the source for all that exists. Ach ein litzur shum musag mimahuso, kiyu yisporach baal koach uval bechira. Now, he raises an interesting point here, which we'll return to in just a couple of minutes, which is we can't understand anything about him. In which case, one might wonder how we know that he can't create a square whose side is longer than its diagonal. We'll return to that question. V'yodeh mimasim v'yodeh tzorkam v'chol hamitrachesh imahem u'mehaveh eskol ha'naseh b'kol ha'olamos v'rtzono yisporach. So here we have the Rambam, Rashban, Chazonish, and there are others as well, all arguing that God cannot do that which is illogical. And this does not contradict omnipotence, because omnipotence means he could do anything theoretically possible. I believe that the matter is not so simple. Rabbi, yes?
Even though by us things can't be contingent and necessarily true.
Fascinating point. We'll see in just a couple moments. That's actually exactly how Reb Tzadok reads that Rambam. I wouldn't have read the Rambam that way at all. The way I would have understood the Rambam was simply that he's saying that there's a contradiction between divine foreknowledge and free will with respect to the type of knowledge that we as humans have. But with respect to God's knowledge, which is inherent knowledge, so then there's no contradiction whatsoever. It's not that it's illogical. It might be that we have a very hard time understanding that, and that's because we can't understand his logic. That's the way the Avodah Samelach seems to explain it, or Rabbi Tursky explains it that way as well. So the way I understood that Rambam is not that he's saying that it's illogical. It's perfectly logical. It's a logic that we sometimes have a very hard time grasping or intuiting. A lot of things that might be logical are very counterintuitive. But that's what he says over there, at least the way I understand. He's saying that there is no contradiction. We see it as a contradiction because we don't or have a very hard time understanding the nature of divine knowledge. So we think of knowledge in terms of our terms. And in our terms, it is indeed a contradiction. No. In other words, there's a, again, the Rambam didn't use the example of a mathematical a law, but even if we assume that he would agree to that, there's a very big difference, which is that the Rambam thinks there is no logical contradiction between divine foreknowledge and free will. It's simply a fallacy. It's a logical fallacy if you think there is such a contradiction. And he tells you, yeah, you might have a very hard time understanding why there is no logical contradiction, but there is no logical contradiction. He's not saying that God is not bound by logic. He's saying there's no logical contradiction. But as we saw, he does seem to indicate that God is bound by logic. So the two, I would think that there's no question whatsoever from there. Okay, but as I said, we'll see in just a couple moments that there are those who try to read the Rambam the way you are reading it. Yes?
Just to clarify, the Chazon Ish is saying that it must be that God exists because it's impossible to imagine a world without an initial cause. Is that?
That's yes. I mean, that might not be all he's saying. We just looked at a small snippet, okay. But yes. Okay. So, the Rambam writes, at the very first halacha in Mishneh Torah, take a look on page 40, Yesod ha-yesodos ve'amud ha-chachmos leida sheyesh sham matsui rishon v'hu mamtzi kol nimtza v'kol ha-nimtzaim mishamayim v'aretz u'ma shebeinehem lo nimtzu ela mi'amitas himatz'o. The foundational principle and the root of all chachma is that God is the cause for all that exists, and all that exists only exists because of the truth of his existence. Now, the Rav made the following diuk about this line in the Rambam. It's quoted here by Rabbi Twersky. We'll just read it, page 40. Judaism does not recognize a natural moral independent of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the source of all morality. Tversky actually discusses this relating to last week's Parsha, topic we could discuss another time, which is how could Avram Avinu ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaShofei Kol Arts Al Yasa Mishpat, which seems to be arguing that God's actions are immoral, and how could you do that? So the resolution to that problem we could discuss another time. Rambam opens his magnum opus by declaring that the fundamental principle which underlies all others and the pillar of all wisdom, is knowing of the existence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, creator of heaven and earth. Soloveitcher commented that Rambam indicates that all wisdom depends upon knowledge of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, i.e., there is no ethical or moral knowledge independent of him. Okay, now the question is, how is the Rav getting that from here? So maybe it's just saying that since Amud HaChachmos is Leida Shehu Matsui Rishon V'Umamti Kol Nimtza, so that would imply that all knowledge must come from him, in which case there could be no knowledge, or including moral or ethical knowledge, independent of him. I think the Rav is also being medayik from V'humamtzi kol nimtza, and therefore to say that there's some type of moral knowledge outside of him would be to contradict that he's the mamtzi kol nimtza. I'm not sure that's what is meant here. But that could be an objection to what we're saying, meaning to say, if God is the cause for all that exists, so how could there be something that exists outside of him? And if you see 2 plus 2 equaling 4 as being something that exists, so not necessarily and naturally, then it's not true that he's mamtzi kol nimtza, because he wasn't mamtzi that nimtza. So we could get out of that question. We could say that 2 plus 2 equals 4 is not something that exists, meaning to say God is the cause for all that exists. However, things that are necessarily true are not an existent. They're not nimtza. Again, the Chazon Ish, as we noted, used the words nimtzayim, but perhaps that's a little bit imprecise. Hashem is the cause for all that exists. If you think that the laws of logic are necessary, and therefore God could not violate them, so that's because those aren't things that exist. They're necessarily true, but they don't exist. But I think there's a more fundamental problem to this argument that God is bound by logic. And that is, how could we think that logic, which is basically laws, ideas that we came up with on our own, using our intellect, it's not like Hashem was Megala at Sinai, the laws of logic. We came up with them on our own. So how could we think that something that we came up with on our own limits HaKadosh Baruch Hu? We know nothing of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. As the Medrash, just a couple of sources that highlight this point on page 46, the Medrash we referred to earlier, Vayomer Elokim al Moshe, Amr Rabbi Abba Bar Mamar, Amr LeHaKadosh Baruch Hu Moshe, Shmiata Mevakesh Leida, Lefi Ma'asai Ani Nikra, Pamim Shani Nikra Bekel Shakai, Betzvakos Belokim Bashem. So the Medrash is telling us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is known by his Masai, not by his shame. As Rabbi Tursky quoted last night from the Rambam, that there's nothing of his essence that we could possibly know. When we talk about knowing HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we don't mean that we know him in his essence, because that to us is totally unknowable. We are finite, we're limited, and he is infinite and limitless. And therefore, when we talk about knowing HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what we're saying is that we could see his actions and explain his actions, understand to some degree his actions, and know him through his actions. But his essence is inherently unknowable to us. Rabbi Tursky quoted the Rashba last night as saying this. We'll just see one citation from the Nefesh HaChaim that highlights this point. Again, page 40. Ein hakavana aval inyan habrachos habracha lo yisbarach shemo. Ein hakavana laatzmos adon yachid baruchu kabiachol chalila v'chalila ki hu miromam me'al kol bracha. Aval ha'inyan kemoshkasav b'zohar dekudsha b'richu sasim v'galya. Ki atzmos ein sof baruchu sasim mikol sisimin. Ve'en l'chanos olchas v'shalom b'shum shem klal. Afilu b'shem havaya baruch hu, v'afilu b'kutzo shel yud debay, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's essence is hidden from us, it's unknowable. Even the names that we know of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even the shem havaya, do not capture that essence. V'af gam mash b'zar kadosh mechaneh yisbarach b'shem ein sof, einenu kinui alav yisbarach shemo, Ela kavana al hasagasenu, oso mitzad kochos hanafshim meito bischabruso birtzono lo lamos. Even when we refer to Kadosh Baruch Hu as the Ein Sof, even that term, as referring to God as infinite, is still not his essence, but rather it's the way in which he connects to us in the worlds. Ulezos kinu Ein Sof, velo Ein Reishis, ki beemes mitzad atzmus yisbarach shemo Ein lo Sof velo Reishis, rak mitzad. Asagasenu kochosav yisborach. Halo kol asagasenu hurak reishis. Aval ein sof lagia basaga lehasig es kochosav yisborach hanishbayim. Umashe musag etzlenu ktsas vanu mechanim umitarim kama tarim v'shemos v'kinuyim umidos kimo shematzinum batora uvchol matbea tfila. Kulam hem rak mitzad hischabruso yisborach el haolamos v'akochos me'es habriya. So anything that we know of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not about his essence. It's about the way in which we perceive him. Or, to put it differently, they're all post-briya. Pre-briya, we have no conception of HaKadosh Baruch Hu whatsoever. Now, if we're really saying that God can't violate logic, so aren't we talking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu pre-briya, essentially? Aren't we saying that these are inherent limitations? And how could we think to limit HaKadosh Baruch Hu if we don't begin to understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And therefore, the notion of saying that God is limited by knowledge seems not just presumptuous, but something which inherently is impossible to know. To put it a little differently, we think 2 plus 2 is 4 because we haven't encountered in our universe any counterexamples. Okay, there, God, how do we know of other universes? Or even if we say in all conceivable universes, it's impossible. But that's still looking at HaKadosh Baruch Hu from within all universes. And whether you say this with respect to the laws of logic or math or the like, how can we be sure that this is really true? So that's the question that we have to consider. So perhaps the answer is that the Rambam, the Rashba, the Chazon Ish don't mean to say that God could not violate a particular logical or mathematical axiom. All they're saying is that if it were to be the case that God could not violate this logical axiom or this mathematical law, that would not imply a deficiency mitzido yisborach. In other words, when we say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is kol yachol, he could do everything, that means to say that there's no deficiency. And if it were the case that God could not create a square whose diagonal was longer than its sides, so that would not imply a deficiency because it's inherently impossible, it's necessarily impossible. Now, do we actually know that God cannot do that? Of course not. How could we possibly know that? And the same thing with respect to all laws of logic. We cannot know that. What they're saying is, if it were to be the case that God cannot violate a law of logic, that would not be a problem because that doesn't contradict omnipotence. Whether he can or he can't, we don't know. As far as we could tell, he can't. But that doesn't mean that he actually can't because we can know nothing of his essence. So that's one possibility. It doesn't really sound like that's what the Rambam is saying. An alternative possibility is to say as follows. Perhaps we could say that since the laws of logic have been deduced and are universally accepted using the intellect that's granted to us by God, so we can see the laws of logic as a form of quasi-revelation and trust that he is not misleading us. In other words, how is it that all human beings are able to figure out that 2 + 2 = 4, or that the certain laws of logic that everybody agrees to are true? The answer is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us our minds, and he allowed our minds to understand and discover this truth. And therefore, in a sense, this truth is coming from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And just like we're meant to act based off of our intellect to determine that which is right and that which is wrong. For example, the Torah clearly presumes that a person is supposed to use his seichel to figure out at times what's right and what's wrong. The Rambam writes in Mor Nevuchim 3:17, he will reward the most pious for all their pure and upright actions, although no direct commandment was given them through a prophet. And he will punish all the evil deeds of men, although they have not been prohibited by a prophet, if common sense warns against them. Right? So human beings are expected to do that which is right or not do that which is wrong, even if there's no explicit tzivoy. An example from last week's parsha, the destruction of the city of Sodom. The pasuk in Yechezkel writes that Sodom was destroyed because they didn't give tzedakah. Or as we say in Pirkei Avos, they had the philosophy of Shali Shali V'Shalcha Shalcha. 1 second. Giving tzedakah, that's not a mitzvah that B'nai Noach are mitzuveh upon. Why were they held accountable for failure to do so? Answer is, because they could have figured it out on their own. And why are they held responsible? Because God gave them the tools, the seichel, which allows every human being the ability to figure out that at least under certain circumstances, helping people that are helpless is the right thing to do, and failing to help them is the wrong thing to do. So therefore, we're held accountable for not doing so. Later in the year, perhaps we'll return to this topic at greater length. There are many Makoros, both pre-Matan Torah and post-Matan Torah, that highlight this point. Likewise, we are asked to use our seichel to interpret the Torah. Whether it's Kal Vachomer or Svara, like the Gemara asks, Lama Likra Svarahu. So Hashem asks us to use our seichel. Now, does that mean that when we're using our seichel to discover that which is moral, that means that there's some type of morality outside of God? No, of course not. There might be morality outside of revelation, but that too is a form of revelation. Ki me Hashem yiten chachma mipiv dasu svuna. The chachma that we have comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Obviously, it's less clear than revelation that's explicit, but in a certain sense, it's no less binding. Obviously, again, when there's a tzivoy to do something that goes against that which we would know from our seichel, we follow the tzivoy, because ultimately what we're trying to do is follow Ratzon Hashem. So when HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Avram to offer Yitzchak as a korban, he's machni himself, he's mevatel his seichel to the Ratzon Hashem. But absent that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to use our seichel. And, as I said, to some degree we could see that which we could determine through our seichel as being true and coming from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that being the case, then if it is the case that using our seichel, human beings are convinced that certain logical rules are true, we could assume that they're true, even with respect to God. Now, it's true, we could never be absolutely sure, and we understand that we may be erring, but nevertheless, we could still say with confidence that these things are necessarily true, and as such, would apply to God. Yes?
Like, so we're saying that God created morality. So that the problem...
I'm not saying that exactly. No, no, no. That's a different point, not for this today's discussion.
Okay. So how are we...
Today's discussion isn't about morality.
Okay.
That's a good question. We can come back to that. What we're saying is that when we figure out that something is moral or immoral, using our seichel, that's not just our seichel, but that is a tool that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us to discover that which is right or wrong. And therefore, that too is coming from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ki mi Hashem yiten chachma, mipiv das usfuna. So, that's coming from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Just like that which we know is right or wrong based off of the Torah comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because Torah is mei Hashem, so too, when we figure that something is right or wrong using our seichel, that too comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And likewise, when we think that something is logical or illogical, that too is coming from HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
Because the means by which we figure that out is
right.
What's given to
us. Right. In terms of the user for dilemma and the like, that's not today's discussion. Okay. Now, there are some sources that would seem to disagree. Perhaps they don't in light of what we just said, but would seem to disagree with what we saw in the Rambam, the Rashba, the Chazon Ish. Let's start with the Maral. The Maral here in Gvuras Hashem, in the Hakdama Shnia, which is on the bottom of page 41, is responding to certain thinkers, among them Ralbag, who seem to limit Nisim based off of their understanding of science. And while Maral asserts that these thinkers are motivated by a noble cause, they really err in their understanding. So, we mentioned this a couple weeks ago, the Ralbag understands that the cessation of the sun and the moon at Givon, or the sun going backwards at the end of Sefer Malachim, are not to be understood in their simple sense. And the Ralbag comes to that understanding based off of his Aristotelian worldview, and whatever his motivations are need not concern us at present. But the question really is this a appropriate justification for not reading the Psukim Kipshutam? And so the Maral attacks this, the Rivash also, in the Tshuva we studied earlier, attacks this. And what I want to focus on, though, is Maral's understanding of the story, which is quite remarkable. And the Maral writes, basically, that instead of the simple understanding that there was a nais and the sun stopped, which is an event that the whole world would have witnessed, Maral suggests that the sun stopped from the perspective of the Jewish people, but it kept on going from the perspective of the world. Now, you might say this is logically impossible. The sun cannot both stand still and move simultaneously. I'm not actually sure that's logically impossible, but let's assume for the moment it is. So, Maral answers, seems to answer, we'll read it carefully, maybe that's not what he's saying, but he seems to answer that God is not bound by logic. And therefore, it's not a problem to say that contradictory statements happen simultaneously. And the idea is very simple, that the sun's stopping happened on one plane, in one realm, in the supernatural realm, and within the natural realm, the sun kept on going, and that's what we mean. So let's take a look at some of what the Maral writes. Amnam tzarech iyun im nase neis zeh l'chol ha'olam o lo nase neis zeh rak b'ofek kahu ki yesh lomar ki liyoshua liyisrael b'ofek kahu hayamidas ha'shemesh u'l'chol ha'olam lo amda ha'shemesh v'zeh yoseh pele more al gvuras ha'shem yisbarach v'nifla osav. The fact that Hashem could both cause the sun to stop for Klal Yisrael, they'll continue moving for the rest of the world, is even a greater nace than simply saying that the sun stopped for everybody. Vim yomar echi tachen davar ze betzior. How is that possible for the sun to both have stopped and not stopped? Ki teilecha shemesh v'tamod b'pamachas, shezeu b'atzmo kimo shekasav b'ralbag sheim shnei hafachim b'nosei achad, v'lo yitkavtzu yachad. You're going to say that shnei hafachim b'nosei achad is impossible. Kfar amarnu shedvarav lo yitzdeku b'zeh. The Ralbag was wrong when he said that. Ki evshar, v'yacholios shetelech hashemesh mitzad inyana hanahug, v'tia midah la mitzad hanes. Shiacholios ledavar echad shnei dvarim hafachim, mitzad shnei bechinos. V'ateva davar miyuchad, v'shelo b'teva davar miyuchad. Ki ein safek, ki ma'alas hanes habilti tiv'i, hu yoser b'ma'ala uv'madrega min ateva. Umipnei shem shtei madregos mischalfos, hine haisa shemesh b'shnei bechinos, kifi chilof hamadregos. Telech mitzad ateva, v'tamod mitzad bilti ativi. Ki kishem shera'ui shetelech mitzad ateva, kach yesh bechinas sichlis, shebe'emtza shemaim, yesh la'amida. This very powerful understanding can be seen perhaps in a number of places in Chazal. L'mashal, the Gemara in Megillah says, page 42, Davar ze misores biyadenu meavosenu makom aron eno min amida. The way Rashi explains that is that the Kodesh HaKodashim was 20 amos, and there was 10 amos on each side of the aron. So therefore, the aron was eno min amida, didn't occupy space. So what does that mean? So what it means, according to Maral, is that space is a constriction of the natural world, and miraculous interventions take place within a different reality. And within that reality, then space is not a constriction. Likewise, when Chazal say in Pirkei Avos that in the Beis HaMikdash, Omdim Tzfufim, all the people were squished together while standing, yet Mishtachavim Rivachim, there was room for everybody to bow. What's the pshat in that nes? Is it that the Beis HaMikdash miraculously expanded all of a sudden? Is it that all the people shrunk all of a sudden? Or no? The pshat is that within the realm of nes, within the realm of the supernatural, then space is not a limitation. That's what Chazal mean when they say that kol adibros were said in one instant, or zachar v'shamor, mashena peyachol, Ledaber ve'ena ozen yachol lishmoa. That's because, again, within that miraculous existence, and Klal Yisrael were elevated to a miraculous existence at Sinai, so then time is not a limitation. Space is not a limitation for those that are mishtachav in the Beis HaMikdash. When you show that his batlus to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Beis HaMikdash, HaKadosh Baruch Hu removes you from the restrictions of the natural world, and as such, the limitations of space don't apply. And the same thing is true with respect to the sun stopping at Givon Dome. It's not the pshat that there was the sun simply stopped, it's that Klal Yisrael inhabited a different reality. So, on the one hand, Maral does seem to say that logic doesn't limit God, but at the same time, perhaps it's not necessarily against what we saw in the Rambam, because what he's saying is something a little different. He's saying that time, place, space, and the like are rules or limitations that certainly everybody would agree don't apply to God, and don't even apply to people when HaKadosh Baruch Hu removes them from the realm of the natural world. Likewise, a Rav Kook very frequently, take a look at, I forgot to put it here. But Rav Kook very frequently refers to the notions that opposites can happen at the same time. Shnei Hafachim b'Nosei Achad, maybe one Hasidic source that you see on page 42 sort of expresses this in its most extreme fashion. Tzarech Adam l'ha'amin b'emuna shlema she'en shum davar nimna me'aborei. V'gam das ha'adam hi tamid bi'ad Hashem yisbarach she'kemo she'anu b'seichel hazeh uviyadiyasenu uvahasagasenu hazos she'efshar l'shnei hafachim b'nosei achad ken yachol l'chadesh lanu deya v'seichel acher v'asaga acheres v'navin v'neda b'yadiya gemura she'efshar lios shnei hafachim be. Sorry, I lost the place. Binosei achad, binosei me'achar shasagasenu v'sichlenu v'yediasenu heim nivraim v'nistarim ratzon Hashem yisborach. Mashachalak lanu v'sider lanu v'yachol hashanu l'hafech ma'pech me'hefech al hefech u'kemoshen avinata bebiru gamor sheshnayim heim yoser me'achad ken yachol Hashem yisborach lafos sichlenu v'datenu shenavin bebiru garur gamor Shechad hu yoser mishnayim. So he seems to be taking the idea that the Maharal said of Shnei Hafachim b'Nosei Achad and saying what that means is that that reality that we came up with, that two opposite things can't simultaneously exist, is simply based off of the Seichel that Hashem gave us, like we said before, but that doesn't, we shouldn't assume that that reflects necessary reality. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu could just change it and switch it. And therefore, we have to believe be'emunah shelema that there's nothing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu can't do. It sounds like he's saying that it's ridiculous to say that the laws of logic would bind God, because, after all, like we said before, the laws of logic are things that we came up with. And that's something that Hashem made us think, and Hashem could make us think otherwise. So here, another expression of this in the writings of Reb Tzadok is exactly what you said before in terms of interpreting the Rambam and the resolution to free will and divine foreknowledge. Again, this isn't the way I would have read the Rambam, but take a look, page 43, Reb Tzadok. Avzeu soda yediyah v'abachira shetireitz bo arizal b'sof sefer arba meo shekel kesef de yediyah b'makom acher v'abachira b'makom acher. That the answer is that Yediyas Hashem, divine foreknowledge, is true, and Bechira Chafshis is also true, and they exist in different planes, the Arizal says. Ayin Sham Lashono. V'gam B'sof HaZor HaChadosh Miza Ayin Sham U'V'yarnuhu B'makom Acher D'Ratza Lomar Mamish Tiratza Rambam She'en Yediyasenu Ki Yediyaso. So this is exactly what the Rambam meant when he said that. U'li Yediyas Hashem Yisborach Eina Bechira Makcheshes Klal Afal Pi She'hefach HaYediyah V'yefshar lebeis dvarim hafachim b'nosei achad zehu legabenu. That which we say that yefshar l'shnei hafachim b'nosei achad is coming from is with respect to us, our logic, our existence, the existence, the reality which we occupy. Aval legabei Hashem yisbarach efshar. So it sounds like he's saying that yes, indeed, there is a contradiction, but that's not a problem mitzido. So if you conclude that logically foreknowledge and free will are incompatible, you still have no problem klapei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ukemo shekasav be'akdama sefer gvuras Hashem, what we just read, be'inyan neis b'shnei hafachim yu'yin sham. Again, I'm not sure that's the only way to read the Maharal. I think the Maharal could be understood in as being consistent with the Rambam. V'chein l'gabenu ha-bechira u'l'gabei Hashem Yisbarach ha-yediya u'v'emes l'gabei Hashem Yisbarach ein makom l'bechira. Now this idea that we see in the Maharal, that we saw in Reb Tzadok and other thinkers, Reb Kook, has a very interesting place in terms of dealing with contradictions with Torah, between Torah and science, seeming contradictions. Now is not the time to fully address this problem. Perhaps we'll get back to it another week. A number of you did tell me you wanted to talk more about that. But Rav Soloveitchik has a fascinating Ha'ara that I think very much relates to this Maharal and Reb Tzadok that we just saw. And the Rav basically argued that contemporary physics allows us to conceive of Maharal's thesis in a way that perhaps was previously impossible. In the opening of Halachic Mind, page 43, the Rav writes, "It would be difficult to distinguish any epoch in the history of philosophy more amenable to the mediating to the mediating homo religiosus than that of today. What makes our epoch so different? Because philosophy remained the satellite of science until the beginning of the 20th century. This was because both Aristotle and Newton adopted a scientifically purified world as the subject matter of their studies." What that basically means is that until the 20th century, the universe was seen as this neat, orderly existent, and it had rules, and the rules governed how it worked, and there was some type of objective reality, and therefore, you had to figure out how religion worked, was compatible with science, and sometimes then people had to shtup religion into science. And they were bothered by these questions because they saw reality as something that was fixed. And the Rav writes that with the understanding of quantum physics, so that, like we talked about last week when we did Elu Ve'elu Divrei Elokim Chayim, that is no longer true. Halachic Mind is a very difficult work. I'm not quite sure I understand most of it, but there's a summary of the Rav's thesis over there by Dr. William Kohlbrenner, which we could just read over here to make it a little straightforward. The Newtonian philosopher posited the existence of a universe which was rationally quantifiable and objectively given. The quantum physicist, by contrast, argued against scientific objectivity. Atomic and subatomic phenomena did not conform with Newtonian's rationalist map. There was uncertainty, and even worse, quantum physics placed the ostensible objectivity of scientific observation in doubt. There was no such thing as the innocent observer standing outside or above an ostensibly pure objective reality. The scientist helped to create his experimental reality. There was no such thing as purely objective data. In other words, quantum physics, the Rav writes, showed A, there's no rationally ordered objective world, and B, there's no methodological objectivity. And therefore, in light of quantum physics, Maharal's theory, for example, that from one perspective the sun moved, and from a different perspective the sun didn't move, becomes much more reasonable. And the Rav then goes ahead, turn to page 44, argues that this is something that's helpful with respect to dealing with contradictions between religion and science. Just to explain for a moment, what did the Maharal say? That there are two realms. There's the supernatural realm and there's the natural realm. Within the natural realm, the sun kept on moving. That's why, by the way, nobody might have recorded outside of the Torah that the sun had stopped all of a sudden at a certain time in history. That's not the Maharal's reason for saying this pshat, but it does answer that question. Anyhow, there's this supernatural reality in which the sun stopped, and that existed simultaneously with the natural reality within where the sun kept on moving, or the earth kept on moving, however you see it. One way or the other, the point is that they're both true. It just depends on which perspective you occupied. So the Rav said the same thing is true with respect to Torah and science. They're describing two different realities. Torah is describing a higher reality, a deeper reality, a truer reality. And the fact that you can't figure out how to be miyashev those two realities, the reality of Torah and the reality of science, doesn't have to imply that one of those realities is false. Going back to the example we said last week when we talked about Elu Ve'elu Divrei Elokim Chayim and wave particle duality. So here's what the Rav wrote. The Rav called this epistemological pluralism, meaning to say epistemology is the way in which we know things, and pluralism is the possibility of multiple things being true at the same time. So epistemological pluralism has not abandoned the realm of logic. In other words, when we say this is true, going back to what I said before, when the Maharal said the sun both stood still and didn't stand still at the same time, that's not because the Maharal was denying logic when he said it's possible to have shnei hafachim b'inyan echad. It says only that reason itself leads the physicist, psychologist, philosopher, and homo religiosus to a pluralism of viewpoints. The heterogeneity of knowledge, however, is not based upon a manifold of methods employed by theoreticians, but upon the plurality of the objective orders they encounter. Or, to put it differently, quantum physics rescued the philosopher of religion from his slavish attachment to the objective Newtonian science. And that, I think, is, again, in different words, really what the Maharal was saying. Now, and therefore, again, when people encounter seeming contradictions between Torah and science, so one mahalech is to try to be miyashev them. Another mahalech, what the Rav is saying, what the Maharal is saying, is that you shouldn't try to be miyashev them. They occupy different realms. They're answering different questions. Maharal writes that when scientists and Torah give a reason for the same phenomenon, they're dealing with different realities. Just to give an example that he says, then we're out of time. So, if you ask, the Torah says, what's the reason for a rainbow? And the Torah explains in Parshas Noach, tells us the story of the bris and the like. And somehow or another, a rainbow is associated with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's bris not to destroy the world again. If you ask scientists, they'll explain that the rainbow is based off of refraction of the light. So you could say, there's a stira. And then you could say, all right, I have to resolve the stira. Maybe scientists are wrong. No, al karcheinu namin l'divrei avanim. Okay, so maybe Torah means something else. No, the Maharal is saying that Torah is telling us the reason behind the scientific reality, if you wish. It's answering a different question. Of course, from a scientific perspective, the rainbow is caused from refraction of the light. The Torah is not trying to address that question because the Torah isn't a science book. The Torah is telling us why is that reality true, or what's the reason behind that reality, or the like. And to go ahead and ask it and see it as a stira reflects the fact that you're not taking the appropriate approach to understanding Torah. You're looking at it from the wrong perspective. You think that the Torah is trying to explain scientific reality, or you think that scientific reality is objectively true. And when you understand that they're really on different planes, both planes are true. One might be deeper, but they're both true. So then the question simply melts and dissolves. Have a good chance.